Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, many of you know that this show can only exist with your support. Mainly, it'd be weird if Buzz and I were talking and no one was listening. But more than that, I rely on your generous financial support in order to keep the show running on all cylinders. This is a fully independent podcast run by me and a few of my best friends. And unlike so many podcasts, we don't have a major multinational media conglomerate backing us with promotion and tech and all the rest of it. So when you get a chance, make sure to stop by our Patreon page at BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow and sign up for at least $1 per month. You'll hardly miss it. And you'll be supporting the show in the best way possible. Don't forget to tell all your friends, too. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com or just click the all caps Patreon link beneath the logo at BobSeska.com. Thank you in advance. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
He's in a taco truck in Eagle Rock. It's one I go to. And I just overheard the guy's conversation. He was finishing up his order. And the guy goes, "So, bro, my mom told me not to eat the cilantro if it's from Mexico, because they're shitting in it to get back at Trump." And I said, "Well, don't get me wrong. I'm all for a good Trump takedown. But I'm not sure if they've got that level of organization going on in a Mexican cilantro field." "All right, everyone gather around. Let's all start brainstorming." "No idea is a bad idea." "Yes, Crazy Eddie." "Okay. This is a little outside the box. But I say we shit in the fucking cilantro."
Bob Seska.
Bob. Bob. Bob!
The Bob Seska Show.
The great Al Madrigal. That was from an episode of Anthony Bourdain in Los Angeles. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, August 6, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show presented by BubbleGenius.com. It is the greatest soap in the universe. Hi, what's up? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hi, it's day 929 of the Trump crisis, day 93 of the constitutional crisis, 455 days until the 2020 presidential election. And, oh, it's my good friend sitting right over there. It's Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
Bob. Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody. Hi. Oh, man. I just got back from the airport just in time for the show. Just barely made it here today. Well, first of all, I don't know if you noticed, but the plane had to circle a couple of times before landing.
Oh, that's true.
Really? That's an inside joke. No, really, I mean, what a wasted trip this was for me. I mean, why the hell did I go to Toledo?
Home of the Mud Hens, home of Tony Paco's Hungarian-style hot dogs. Trump loves those hot dogs.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Bob, could you hold this hubcap? Could you hold this hubcap that I stole while
sure.
I call on our... I want to call on our listeners to condemn stealing. So if you could do that...
I'll take it off your hands. Thank you.
Remember, it's the mental illness that drives the show, yeah, not the microphones, okay? No, but seriously, like the president and Joe Biden, I too am worried about the effects of violent media. Mm-hmm. I worry that all that time I spent watching Wile E. Coyote cartoons is going to make me want to push a boulder off a cliff.
You too? God, I was just so tempted to do that all day.
Well, now you know where we got that. But
Right.
Speaking. I see Mitch McConnell's falling down on the job again.
Ah! What a shame. What a That's shame. It. Everyone, thoughts and prayers to Moscow Mitch.
Yeah, poor Mitch. Everybody, he's Bob. I'm Buzz. We are both white. And we are dipping into the Kool-Aid when we don't even know what that means.
Ah, that is true. Right. All right, my friend.
That's what I have for you this week.
Outstanding work. Okay, so, you know, I thought before we jumped in headfirst into all the events from this past weekend that right. There was a bit of news that I saw across my desk recently. And, you know, this is important, and maybe we need to rise up here on the show and address this with a new feature. Now, first, let me back up. But the news story specifically is that July was officially the hottest month that humans have ever recorded since record keeping began more than a century ago. It eclipsed the previous record holder, which was July of 2016. We're going way back to July of 2016 for the previous record holder, right?
While we've been paying attention to the president and Russians and racists and people with guns, the world has been ending very rapidly.
Yeah.
So, you know, we both deserve our attention, I believe.
I think so. And I think what we need to do here on the show is provide a public service. And we did this on Friday's after party, and I thought I'd do this again. We have a new weather reporter, a new weather forecaster here on the show.
I'm waiting with bated breath. Did you hear the bait?
Me too. Absolutely. This is our new weather reporter. We thought we'd do this. I mean, my God, what we have to do is at least alert people to when it's going to be blazing hot and there might actually be a chance of a tornado.
People need fair warning, and this is our contribution to that.
This is it.
The Bob Seska Show. All the weather. Weekend weather.
Hey, this is the Tiger Grandma with another weather report. It's raining like hell. It's hot. It's shit. It's humid, and there's a slight chance of a tornado tonight, and my plans got canceled. I had a date, but he's too chicken shit to drive in the fucking rain, and I was planning on getting me some sausage, so I am actually pissed the fuck off, and I'm going in the fucking house.
Weekend weather.
Yeah, see?
There we go.
That's right.
Our new meteorologist, ladies and gentlemen.
Doing our best to pass along to you all the latest developments in weather and climate. Okay.
We'll keep you posted. She'll keep you posted.
That's actually Angry Grandma. We played Angry Grandma on the show on Friday, and my God. Sometimes I want to strangle the internet. Other times I just want to hug the internet and say, thank you, internet, for helping us to laugh in all the tragedy.
Here's my problem, and this won't surprise you. I was raised by hillbillies. No, I was raised among them, certainly, to a large degree, and I know them well.
Right.
And I can't tell if that's real or not. There are a number of things on the internet, some of them good. There's one where there's a redneck sitting in his pickup truck talking about his experience at a black picnic, and it's a beautiful story. It's an important story. I'm not sure it's real. Yeah. And I have the same problem with Grandma here. And I'm a pretty gullible guy, but I'm like on the fence because I kind of know that this is real. But part of me has some doubts about it. I mean, having known these people and walked among them, I know what to expect.
Yeah.
And it's partly there and partly not. So I just put a little asterisk. Something you should know about our meteorologist, because we like to leave it up to the media to vet our people.
America has to laugh, right?
I know. You're right. And I didn't mean to take that away from you. Just like I said, as a person who's walked among them, it had to be said.
That's right. My favorite thing about Angry Grandma is not just the tornadoes. My favorite thing about Angry Grandma is the fact that she uses whatever's lying around as a microphone. Like in this particular clip, she's got a can of Lay's potato chips, almost like a Pringles can of Lay's potato chips. And she's using that as a microphone. Because initially, I didn't know why the hell she was holding that. I turned to Kimberly and I was like, is that product placement? What is that? Why is she holding that thing? And Kimberly informed me, oh, that's her microphone. She just uses items from around the kitchen as a microphone. And I said, that is the greatest thing in the world. Just like me. I mean, I'm not talking into an actual mic.
Well, we did that as kids, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly
right.
The
handle of a jump rope did very nicely. You could be Bob Barker if you wanted to.
All right. So, you know, we start out with a few laughs here, but we're going to get serious because, you know, the events of the past few days have been immensely serious. Yeah. And the number of things that we need to cover, what I'm hoping to do is to avoid the usual tropes. And this happens because this is happening so often with these gun massacres where we almost end up. And I really look at the cable news media in particular as being guilty of this, where it's almost like, it's almost like a post shooting Mad Libs that they fill in. You know, this is like, okay, well, let's we need a noun, a verb here, an adjective, and we'll just fill in all the blanks with the usual crap. And the thing that I keep coming back to, Buzz, is the pervasiveness of the gun culture in this country and how we so often end up in the aftermath of a shooting like this with the wrong ideas. We start looking at the wrong things. Certainly the president right now is looking at the wrong things.
Not directing us to look at the wrong things.
Let's look at mental illness. Let's look at video games, even though we know that video games in particular are popular around the world. I mean, immensely popular in so many parts of the world. Germany, Japan, Australia, England, France, South Korea, and the Netherlands all spend more time per capita on video games than we do here in the United States.
Say, Bob, they don't have a gun violence problem.
No. I mean, the rate of gun violence is significantly lower in those nations, jaw-droppingly so. I mean, so it can't be video games causing this. And the thing we need to zero in on is, in terms of tackling this, not just tackling the supply of guns with new gun regulations. Because as far as I'm concerned, the kind of gun regulations we need should be basically the same as regulations on cars and drivers, right? I mean, everyone's fine.
The guns are already out there, and although some may be bought back, they're going to stay out there. That's not going to change. We can maybe slow the flow into our streets of guns. We can, I think, as you said, regulate them as we would a car or anything else.
Gun owners should be regulated like drivers, people who own cars and drive cars. Guns should be regulated like cars. There should be certain safety mechanisms. There needs to be certain rules about how you use them out in the world and so on. These are all things that need to happen.
What does it say in the Second Amendment? Well regulated, I believe.
Well regulated. Yes, exactly. And we always miss that. Certainly the 2A fetishists always miss that well regulated hyphenated word there in the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. But in addition to tackling the supply of guns through new regulations, I think what the main thing that we need to do, and the main thing that we always end up overlooking, whether it's the climate crisis, whether it's personal health with pharmaceuticals and so on, we never tackle patient zero. We never go after the centerpiece, the cause, the root of the problem. And as far as I'm concerned, and speaking specifically about El Paso and the disaffected young loner who committed that atrocity in El Paso over the weekend, we have an entire generation of young, disaffected men, young in their 20s, is basically the shooter in El Paso being a fairly typical representation of these people who are radicalized online. But we can't overlook the fact that this is a generation of young men who have been raised post 9/11. And one of the things that happened after 9/11 is it became even more so than when it started back in the 1980s. It really hit a fever pitch after 9/11. The idea that the way we solve problems in this country is at the point of a gun, is at the end of a Patriot missile. The people we look to guide us as a nation, the people we look up to, the people we vote for, the people we dedicate hours of our lives to supporting and so on, and we see them on the news and in our living rooms and on our Twitter feeds every damn day, they are telling us that not only is it patriotic to solve problems using guns, but it is masculine. It is...
I'm not just saying this to make Kimberly my friend, but it sounds like the problem here.
Yeah.
The problem here is testosterone.
It is that, but it is the use of testosterone. You can have testosterone and get weaponized.
Okay, I should have said an excess of testosterone or a desire for an excess of testosterone. Maybe it's a lack of testosterone. Anyway, end of the day, testosterone.
Yeah, yeah, I don't disagree with you. That is absolutely part of this influence that is being generated in this country, especially in the last 20
macho.
Years or so. Yeah, exactly.
It's machismo. It's about being tough. Guys who support Trump do so because they think they're tough. Yeah. They think he's tough, and they think the answer to everything is being tough, whether it's with a fist or a missile or a gun.
Yeah.
And I've always said it's the cowboy culture, too, to a large extent.
Yeah.
It's this fascination we have with guns. We've always been this way. I've told the story on your show before. I won't repeat it, but the time I met the Brits who said their impression as they arrived in America for their first visit was cowboys. That's what they were expecting to see.
Right.
And this was in the 1980s, not the 1880s, the 1980s.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I think the Continental Air Force was flying back in the 1880s, But and it was in the 1980s that this happened. It was a recent thing. And I've heard it, we hear it from around the world that's how we are, and it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And it all ties in with what you're saying here. And I've long said that the problem of this, and this is where you and I strongly agree, is the problem of this is in our psyche, is in our national psyche.
Yeah.
And the fact now added to that we've got a shitload of guns out there.
Yeah, and it's baked into our national DNA. I'm glad you brought this up, Buzz, because that's all part of it. That's all lead up. It's preface to where we are now, whether it's our revolutionary founding, where we founded this country at the point of a gun, whether it's the conquering of the West, whether it's the driving out of the indigenous people in North America. These are all things that we have always revered, and it creates almost this sacrosanct culture around what is really a retail product. It is a piece of hardware where during the frontier times, it was a necessary tool with which to survive. Now it's nothing but this fetishistic military cosplay item that it's so profoundly marketed to susceptible Americans while exploiting the Second Amendment as a convenient marketing tool in that endeavor.
Right. Well, while trying to avoid tropes, it's that high tech, that love of that sort of machinery that has led us to people having military style weapons on the streets.
Yeah.
And so this goes so far beyond. I mean, I don't want to. You know when the Constitution was written and what kind of guns they had then and what it took to reload them and what we compared to what we have today. And by the way, on this subject of high tech, these magazines, the high capacity magazines, the ability to fire 100 bullets in mere minutes. To kill so many people in seconds. This was never meant to be.
No.
This is not. We were never meant to have the right to bear these arms.
Right.
We're not saying you don't have that right. We're saying nobody said anything about this.
Well, we were never meant to have a standing army either, or a gigantic nuclear arsenal. And these are all things that have risen up after World War II that have now become commonplace. And so I really can't overlook the fact that many of our most influential real world leaders are real world influencers, so to speak.
Right.
And I'm not talking about video game characters like the Master Chief and the Super Mario and all the rest of them. It's not even barely even close to the idea of a president or a member of the United States Senate or people on cable news in our lives all the time, influencing how we think, real world issues, right? And so what they are telling us, while Donald Trump and the GOP are desperately trying to sidetrack this entire debate by using the NRA-defined scapegoats, video games and mental illness, every time we hear these things, factors that absolutely exist in dozens of other nations, as we said earlier, where mass shootings are statistically non-existent, we need to instead take a harder and more critical look at the bellicosity of our political leaders who I could cite 1,000 examples from today alone. explain to us that solving a problem by shooting at it is not just the only option, but the noble and patriotic one. That is the atmosphere. That is the climate that the El Paso shooter has been raised in. And then we look
at he and others, not everybody, certainly, and not even all gun owners, I don't think. I'll avoid the tropes.
Okay, good enough. But I mean, you look at an example here, like Chuck Grassley this weekend is going to a gun shoot event. This coming up weekend. He's talking about tone deaf. But, I mean, this is a great example of the kind of thing that our leaders are telling us, the example that they're setting for us. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell, Moscow Mitch, set up a bunch of gravestones for Amy McGrath. Yeah. You know, that's my sweet. God, again, these are the types of influencers that that we're looking at in the news every damn day. It's not
and people eat it up. Americans are a certain percentage of Americans are eating it up with a spoon.
Yeah,
that's again, as I said last week, the most terrifying part of this. Not so much the individuals of Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell, as horrifying as they are, but the people who happily and mindlessly support them.
Part of the problem too, Buzz, is I think our use of military force to solve problems around the world rather than other more diplomatic solutions and so on, because there are myriad diplomatic solutions that we can confront with any problem. I mean, these are things that we reward our politicians for doing these things. But the problem is that we no longer in the post-Vietnam era have any real skin in the game when it comes to those military excursions overseas.
Right. That's true.
We have an entire generation of men in particular who don't get drafted, who have this fetishistic view of military action overseas, a fetishistic view of military-style firearms, that they're now playing dress-em-up. I mean, every day I scroll through my news feed on Facebook, and I don't know why they're targeting me, because I have nothing to do with this shit. Maybe it's because of the research that I do.
What could it be?
Yeah, but I mean, all I see are ads for tactical gear marketed to civilians who probably couldn't find a theater of war on a map if they had a GPS and a flashlight. There's no way that all of these men are in any danger whatsoever of actually seeing combat. So again, it becomes a game. It becomes something that you can just do in your free time, because after all, you can get the guns, you can get the body armor, you can get the special gloves and the special pants where you can put your clips and your these are things that are
so available. I'm trying to keep up here. You're saying then that domestic terrorists, for example, are playing soldier, are dressing up as soldiers and playing soldiers? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly right. That's what's happening. Right. And at the same time, again, I'm looking at the culture of firearms in this country as being the source, being the centerpiece of why we continue to have these problems. Because, again, we have people who figure, well, if Donald Trump and Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan and George H.W., if they're all solving problems with guns, why not me? And so that they see an invasion. They hear a racist president talking about things reflecting white supremacist dogma. And so they say, well, look, this is a good enough cause. We're being invaded. Might as well go to war. And that's what the kid in El Paso did. He went to war, but first he got a sandwich and then went back in and went to war. Again, it's no damn wonder. The tools are available. The idea that, again, we have retail products that are being marketed to us. I mean, make no mistake that the NRA is tasked with one thing, Buzz, and that is to sell as many guns as possible. And they will say and do anything in order to achieve that goal. And one of those things that they do is to use the Second Amendment to bastardize it and use it as a convenient marketing tool. Oh, we got this thing in the Constitution, but don't touch our guns because it's sacred and undeniable. Right. You cannot touch our firearms because right there in the Second Amendment says, I can have as many firearms as I want. It's not about protecting the Constitution or liberty. It's about protecting
it hasn't been for decades.
The profit margins of the gun manufacturers. That's what that is all about.
Man, you've given me a lot to work with. I should have taken notes.
I can repeat anything if you need me to.
You know, as far as the NRA, I'll try to work my way backward. The good news, I think, about the NRA is although we can still see their influence on Republican lawmakers, that influence is shrinking. Their ability to help these senators get reelected financially has shrunk. The NRA, the division within the NRA continues to fester even after Ollie North left. It's still a deeply divided organization and remains under state and federal investigation, D.C., New York, and at the federal level. This battle comes at a good time. Yeah. Now, we established earlier, you and I agree, that the root problem here is the culture. Is this gun for penis culture?
Yeah, exactly.
I want to come back to that. We know that there are things we could do immediately to stem the tide of guns.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do to fix the culture? How do you propose? There are lots of good solutions, I think, legislatively to the gun problem and from an enforcement standpoint and from a judicial standpoint. What can we, anybody, do about this culture you and I have described?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things we have to do is start looking at our national defense in the correct way. And I've got a couple of answers to your question. So this being the first one. I mean, what we do with our national defense is rather than using it as just a blanket of protection, we're super rah-rah and patriotic about it rather than just saying we need a strong one.
I don't disagree, but we have a more pressing problem. We have people dying on the streets in this country.
Yes,
And I understand we have to address that root problem and we have to stop doing those aggressive overseas things. But right now we have a crisis on our hands that I think, and I hate to see us distract from that with a discussion of what we do militarily. It's relevant, it's worth mentioning, and it's absolutely a priority in my mind to get back to right after we deal with the blood on our own streets.
Well, I mean, one of the ways we deal with the blood on our own streets is to confront the issue the same way we confronted big tobacco, for example. All right. Uh-huh. So the way we have reached a point where smoking and smokers have been kind of ostracized to the awnings and bus shelters, right? Where we just, it's something that over a couple of decades of effort, we not only were able to cut the supply, but we were able to change the demand too by saying that smoking is bad and you're kind of gross and weird if you're also a smoker. And
I
so
agree
that,
with where you're going here.
Exactly right. Well, so what I'm doing with the other thing with regard to guns is I'm likewise addressing both the supply and the demand. The demand comes from this patriotic, masculine drive to use firearms to solve problems. I'm making a case for the idea that we use guns to solve problems. We have a shoot first attitude in this country.
Some do.
Well, yeah, and that drives our citizens to take on the same attitude. Now, that's what I think is driving the demand. The supply itself, well, that's simple. Get the guns. Institute regulations that slow the supply of guns. Make it more difficult for people to buy guns and to use guns. And that, I mean, those solutions, we've got an entire roster of legislation.
Right. Oh, I like I said, there are a lot of good ideas for doing that. And I agree that the culture needs to be addressed too. And I agree with you also. I've said for a long time that I think that the secret to breaking this, if I could figure out how to do it, is to make guns and that the gun culture not cool, which is basically you're saying.
Right. Well, and again, one of the reasons why it's cool is because of all of our leadership goes, hey, you know what? We've got a problem with Iran. Let's bomb them. That'll be great for popularity. And everyone goes, yay, let's get out our yellow ribbons and our Lee Greenwood songs and celebrate. And that's how we look at war now. And we got to stop looking at war that way, because looking at war that way is causing us to look at interpersonal problems using the same template, right? We can't solve this problem with the invasion of Mexicans into our country. So what do? Well, we do just like our political leadership does, and we shoot them. You know, and that's, and to me, that is, that's the influence that drives our need to use guns. There is a need in this country for men to buy guns, to stockpile them, and then to use them when they are disgruntled and there are no more solutions available to them.
But I don't think they do it because this nation goes to war. I think this nation goes to war and they enact, they carry out gun violence. They both stem from the same cause. We agree they stem from the same cause. And that cause is that sort of machismo, that toughness, that desire for toughness, that desire for testosterone. That's the cause. And it causes two things that we've talked about here. It causes needless wars, and it causes blood on our own streets. But I don't think you can draw a line from the needless wars to the blood on the streets.
Let's put it this way. I've got a ton of testosterone. I'm not inclined to exercise that hormone.
Well, but you know what I mean. Not everybody who has testosterone uses it that way, but guys with it's that desire to have the biggest dick that drives this. That's what I mean when I say testosterone.
Right. And we live in a culture that reveres using the biggest dick around the globe. Right. So why not? I mean,
find me a domestic terrorist or anybody for that matter who will admit I use a gun because my government does. I'm not getting the connection between the two, other than they are both caused.
I'm not saying it's part of the manifesto. What I'm saying is there's an overall climate of let's use violence to solve problems, and I don't know why that's difficult to understand, but I mean that's the climate we've lived in since at least 1980. I mean, there was a period of time in which the idea of the military-industrial complex was just a sort of a necessary evil that we kind of put up with because that's where we were. And so at some point, our military buildup in this country became ingrained in our patriotic fervor, and solving problems. Right. Using those weapons became something that was associated with strength, resolve, and masculinity. Right. And I'm saying that we have an entire generation of kids and people who grew up with that being the dominant attitude in politics. But I mean, that's all I'm looking at. I'm looking at it as as an influencer, not necessarily as a specific enumerated cause, wired into a particular shooter in an anecdotal way. Do you get what I'm saying?
I do, and I get what you're saying, and I respect what you're saying. I think we just disagree on the effect of the nation's militaristic attitude on the ownership and use of guns on our streets. I think they're both caused by the same thing, and that is their
connection. But I mean, look at the kind of guns.
But I see those as two different roads leading from the same fork.
I mean, look at the guns themselves. Look at the firearms. The most popular firearm in this country right now is part of the family of AR-15s.
Well, sure, because everybody wants to get a bigger gun than the other guy has.
Yeah, well,
that escalation was natural, as natural as it was over on the military.
A bigger gun that is specifically designed to look like a weapon of war. That's why people love it so much. Yes, exactly. Right. So, shocker, there's a correlation between warfare and the view that warfare is patriotic and the way to solve problems, and the need to buy guns, military style guns that look like that's something out of a goddamn movie for some guy to have under his bed to protect and so in case someone comes in and tries to steal his TV. I mean, that's the kind of shit that we live in right now. And that fuels the idea that every single or most, I would say a good 90% of all of the mass shootings that we've seen going back to Sandy Hook have been done with AR-15s. Almost every single mass shooting has been an AR-15. Because why? Well, because that's the weapon of choice. That's the thing that is
Take out a lot of people at once. That's why.
Yeah, exactly right. I mean, here's another example. Yeah. Good example of news coming out today of our shoot first culture. The United States is now going to be testing a new weapons system in the coming weeks that would have been prohibited under the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty that Reagan and Gorbachev signed in 1987. So, I mean, here's another example. We're going to start testing nuclear missiles again. in this country.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, Russia is a threat.
I'm as appalled as you are.
Yeah.
I mean, but here's why. Because China has gotten ahead of both the U.S. and Russia, and U.S. and Russia are eager to catch up. Russia had already fudged on that treaty, had already technically violated it, which prompted the Trump administration to call off the treaty entirely. Yeah. Thanks, Trump. And so now the Russians are free to go even farther than they would have gone before if Trump hadn't scrapped the treaty. And now that gives the U.S. permission to go forward. No, this is sickening, terrible, terrible news, and I'm totally with you on how bad that is. But that's why this is happening, and that's what's happening.
It's ingrained in our national DNA. It is part of Americanism. And the only way we stop these shootings is we got
to U.S. exclusive.
The
use of nuclear weapons and missiles are not U.S. exclusive. That's, you know, it seems to be pretty well accepted in Russia and North Korea and other places.
That, well, again, we're talking about a unique attitude toward a shoot first, ask questions later mentality that goes back to, you know, you were talking about cowboy culture. You're talking about the founding of this country. You're talking about how, you know, there are many, many factors in the creation of the United States that ingrain the use of firearms into our DNA.
True.
And so and that all culminates in our military industrial complex and our use of firearms to solve problems. And so it's not a shocker when people start doing the same thing on their own. So that's essentially where I'm coming from, because I'm trying to dig down to find out why they do it. And the guns need to be curtailed. We need to get these goddamn AR-15s off the streets and do something reasonable at the very least to regulate guns and gun owners the way cars and drivers are regulated at the very fucking least.
That we agree on strongly.
Yeah. But I mean, at the same time, you know, just like with the climate crisis, right? We can do all the things that we need to do as far as preventing hurricanes and high water from damaging our coastal communities and so on. We can do the things that tackle the symptoms of the climate crisis, but at the same time, we got to stop the actual event from occurring. We have to reach down and prevent the root cause of all of this.
Well, both, and we also agree on this, both weapons proliferation nationally and the ownership of and weapons proliferation locally all need to be curtailed, and both are very frightening, and both are existential threats.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, you know what? Let's go back to Donald Trump's address the other day. Yeah, you know what? Before we get into that, I just completely lost track of time. Let's talk about Plexiderm here for a second. I want to get to Donald Trump's remarks from yesterday morning. A lot of things to say about Donald Trump's speech from Monday morning. But before we dig into that, let's talk about Plexiderm here. And of course, The main thing is, and you know what? I tried this experiment the other day. I grabbed some hemorrhoid. See what I do for the show? I grabbed some hemorrhoid cream from the store, and I tried putting it on my under eye bags.
Oh, don't lie. You had it in the medicine cabinet.
Nah, that's okay. You caught me. I did. I had, because of my copious hemorrhoids. And so I gave it a shot. And you know what? It didn't work, and it wasn't fun, and it's not something that you want to do on a regular basis, even if it did work. So what you need to do is you need to go out and buy yourself some Plexiderm. And I'm not talking about days or months to work. Plexiderm is one of those solutions that works almost instantly in a matter of minutes. It's a clinically studied serum that visibly eliminates under eye bags and wrinkles in just a few minutes. I mean, literally in minutes as you're standing there in front of the mirror in your bathroom.
And it smells better than hemorrhoid cream, too.
Yes, significantly so. The science behind Plexiderm is incredible, with clinical studies to back it up. If you look older and tired because of crow's feet, wrinkles, or under eye bags, you can look younger in just minutes with Plexiderm. See for yourself, watch a real video with real people, and see how fast crow's feet, wrinkles, and under eye bags disappear. Those results are backed up by Plexiderm's 30-day satisfaction guarantee. Go to tryplexiderm.com and use the coupon code SEXYLIBERAL. That's two words, all caps, SEXYLIBERAL, for my discount. That's tryplexiderm.com with the code SEXYLIBERAL, or call 1-800-685-685 1292.
Hey, it's Stephanie Miller, America's original sexy liberal, if you don't count Millard Fillmore. Come join us for the Happy Hour podcast. You're probably already doing plenty of drinking and swearing with this stain of a president in office. Well, join me and my celebrity and comedian friends for a raunchy, uncensored ride through politics and pop culture. Pants optional.
The Bob Seska Show.
The Bob Seska Show.
Built a town where there was no town, and the rain lit up for a few short hours.
This is a new song by Jesse Terry. This is a song called Woken the Wildflowers. This is a song off of his, what's the name of the album? Oh, the name of the album.
I like it.
Stargazer. As a second song that we played here from Jesse Terry. I just love this so much. Make sure to submit your music to bobseska.com/music, and we will play some of it here in the show. And, of course, we get it onto our indie music countdown that we do once a month. I think we did one this past weekend. I think we did one. Not quite sure.
It was great. It always is.
So much
highly
fun.
Recommended. Yeah. Oh, by the way, did you like the way I talked up to that vocal there?
That was perfect. Of course. Yeah. I always notice that.
Even with the delay.
Yeah. Now that's what's especially impressive, because there's like a three, well, maybe like a 1 second, 1.5 second delay. So
not as long as those network TV delays, though, where there's like 1001, 1002, 1000, and then the other person talks.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Oh, speaking of which, can I get in a word about this? I had very high hopes for Norah O'Donnell. I was a fan of, sorry about that.
That's your designated Norah O'Donnell sound.
My bicycle delivery is here. I had high hopes for the broadcast. I was a fan of CBS News when nobody else was watching it, because I felt that they packed in more stories than the other networks.
Yeah,
they didn't waste as much time promoting what was going to be on the Olympics or what was going to be on some other time. They spent that time doing news instead, so I liked that. And I enjoyed Jeff Glore as anchor, even though no one knows who he is. And then Norah O'Donnell gets the job. Very popular, beloved Norah O'Donnell. And I thought, well, this is great. And I start watching it. And suddenly, they're doing more critical Trump coverage than I've seen on any network evening news broadcast before. They're calling it out. They're calling it like it is.
Yeah.
They called it racism before the other networks called it racism.
Wow.
As far as Trump's remarks go. And I go, well, now maybe we've got something. And I thought, well, you know, power to the women. Because a lot of our lead correspondents are female as well. And they're just doing a bang-up job. And then suddenly, yesterday, Norah O'Donnell tweets a quote from one of her correspondents, a White House correspondent, Weijia Jiang, saying that the president really turned around his rhetoric.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So that's it for me and Norah. I can't continue if they're going to do that. And I just tweeted, I responded to her, to Norah, and I said, I had such high hopes for you.
See, that's why back in the day, Buzz, we used to refer to Norah O'Donnell as Noron.
Yeah.
Noron.
I get it now. But it was very promising. I was almost to the point where I was going to recommend the CBS Evening News, and then this happened. I'm glad I didn't.
Everyone's looking for the pivot still, and I don't know why that continues to happen. I mean, as soon as Donald Trump gets up and he doesn't start screaming the F word, then suddenly, oh my God, Donald Trump's presidential again. But the fact is that the other conflict and how some of the TV people reacted to the president's remarks yesterday morning was that, you know, when Mueller had a few senior moments during his testimony, it was disaster for the Democrats. It was an optics nightmare for everyone involved. But then when Donald Trump has the same thing happen during his remarks yesterday morning,
I know the difference.
Yeah, he's suddenly presidential again, and we're going to completely... What's that?
You want to know the difference between the two?
Okay.
Expectations. level of expectation.
Maybe that's
right?
True. Yeah.
We expected and hoped for a lot from Mueller, and it was not as sparkly as we hoped it would be, even though it was pretty substantive. We don't expect crap from Trump.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I mean,
in this case, though, I mean, it was beyond just he can't deliver a teleprompter speech to save his life.
Or spell his name.
Yeah, well, right. But at the very end, my God, he not only referred to Dayton as Toledo. But the entire end of that speech, he started to do that thing with his mouth again that no one seems to be particularly concerned about. And, I, you know, again, this is one of those things where I feel like, yeah, just because there are all these other crimes, we shouldn't overlook, you know, certain things in which maybe the president is concealing some sort of health crisis or health problem.
Older people sometimes get a condition called dry mouth. Perhaps you've seen the mouthwash ads.
Yeah.
And so there may have been some of that going on. Oh, there's still speculation about dentures slipping is a possibility. But I'm surprised there wasn't more talk also about the sniffing, the sniffling.
which was
pointed out to me. I mean, I thought that was something is sort of you and I talked about. I saw a lot of mention of that on social media. People were remarking heavily about all the sniffing and sniffling. And then speculating about whether it was Coke or Adderall or whatever. And I thought of you because you were one of the first with that theory. And I was a little skeptical at first, which is so typical of me. And now I'm on board. I'm with y'all.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what is causing it. I mean, and that's part of the mystery. It seems like it's more than just dry mouth. It seems like it is.
Oh, but doesn't kill him.
Yeah, I know. But it seems like he was stung by a wasp and his whole mouth is swelling up or something like that. I mean, that's what it seems like. Here's Donald Trump. This is the tail end of his remarks.
Swallowed a bee.
Yeah, and this includes the Toledo part. You can't necessarily hear the mouth swelling in this because he didn't do the whole President of the United States thing that he did in the Jerusalem speech. Right. But you can tell, especially
he's
after.
He's struggling.
After he says Toledo, he gets rattled, and he doesn't know what to do after he...
And when he speaks, I don't know if it'll come through on the audio, but with the video, when he speaks, you can see he is trying as hard as he can to get those words out. It's taking, I'm giving it all that I've got, Captain. Just can't. He's got the pedal to the metal, and it's the best he can do.
So it's like his tongue has swelled up, and there's nothing he can do about it. That's what happens here. Here's Trump yesterday morning in the Oval Office.
Now is the time to set destructive partisanship aside, so destructive, and find the courage to answer hatred with unity, devotion, and love. Our future is in our control. America will rise to the challenge. We will always have, and we always will, win. The choice is ours and ours alone. It is not up to mentally ill monsters. It is up to us. If we are able...
Incidentally, there's a mentally ill monster in the White House who happens to have the nuclear codes in his pocket. Just thought I'd pass that along as we're talking about taking guns from mentally ill people. Well, there's that too.
To pass great legislation after all of these years, we will ensure that those who were attacked will not have died in vain. May God bless the memory of those who perished in Toledo.
Oh, no.
May God protect them. May God protect all of those from Texas to Ohio. May God bless the victims and their families. May God bless America. Thank you very much. Thank you.
And it seems like I don't know why the audience is clapping for that, but okay. it seems like he said Toledo and then went, oh, shit, I shouldn't have said Toledo.
Yes. You hear that right after he says Toledo. You hear, and we've talked about this before in tapes of him that we've listened to before. You hear a loss of confidence in what he has just said or what he has just read poorly. Now, here's the question. It must have been written that way on the teleprompter, right? Toledo?
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. He doesn't say anything.
Even he knew in his gut, he didn't know what the correct answer was, but he knew that wasn't right. and he makes a reference sheepishly to Ohio, Texas and Ohio later because he's pretty sure it's not Toledo.
Yeah, this he's trying to do. He's trying to retcon his fuck up there by God blessing everybody. You know, it's just like, oh, shit, I said God. What did I say? God bless Toledo? Oh, crap. Okay, God bless Ohio and Texas and North Dakota, and while I'm here, God bless you and the guns and everything. And then he just gets in this spiral and then ends with God bless America.
Yes, more of a question. You know, more of a request.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So what the hell's happening there? I don't know. But as far as the prompter goes, if that was on his prompter, I go back to my theory of thinking that someone in the White House is deliberately sabotaging him with all of those misspellings and prompter gaffes. I mean,
I don't rule it out. I mean, yeah. Look, he's surrounded himself by unqualified people. Stephen Miller wrote that to a large degree. He wrote a lot of it, I understand, and others remaining nameless contributed.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't know. He may have written that part, or you know, any number of things are possible. Mm-hmm. I subscribe to the possibility that somebody's screwing with him, but just as easily it could be just the incompetence that surrounds him by his choice in the White House.
Yeah, it seems so rampant, though. You have to kind of tilt your head to the side like the RCA dog.
It's fun to think about. It really
that's
is.
That's right. I mean, Sarah Kendzior has the theory that that they plan out all of these gaffes. Like, okay, let's throw in a spelling error. Like last week, he was talking about Kim Jong-un, and instead of saying Chairman Kim, he started a tweet by referring to Kim Jong-un as Chairman Kim, where he transposed the R and the I in chairman.
And today he spelled his own name, capital T, small t, U-M-P. So he spelled his name Tutump. Tutump.
One of my favorites. Right up there with Covfefe. Yeah, that's
his
great
own name.
Yeah.
By the way, another note, if I may, on media.
Sure.
And the Trump administration. Because I want to, just as I criticize CBS, I want to do a little defending again, please, of the New York Times, which is not perfect, as we've discussed before. No journalist or journalistic institution is perfect, and we should not apply purity tests to them as we do, just as we should not apply them to public figures.
Right.
The New York Times took a bunch of heat for posting briefly as its banner headline online last night for today's edition, Trump urges unity versus racism, making his speech sound perfectly normal. Now, people, please listen to me for a moment. This was written by a peon. This is written by a headline writer, the lowest echelon employee at the next to the guy who buys the ink.
Writes the obits.
assuming they do that. Yeah. But this is about the lowest rung on the ladder. And so some flunky wrote this headline. It was very quickly replaced with the headline, Assailing Hate But Not Guns. Which is closer,
better
to the and the editor-in-chief now saying, quote, the headline was bad. They messed up. It was a small thing. I saw people saying, once again, we've talked about this before, that's it. I'm canceling my subscription. I'm done with I'm done with the New York Times. No, settle down. They screwed up. But as I was telling people online today, no journalistic institution has done more to hold this president accountable than the New York Times.
And the Washington Post, yeah.
Washington Post runs a very close second.
Yeah.
And sometimes, I mean, it's a neck-and-neck race. But they're the best, or certainly one of the two best. And the free press is a friend of the liberal, is a friend of the progressive.
Yeah.
If it's, you know, and again, it's not perfect. Stop applying a purity test to it, because it isn't going to be that way. But they're on the right track, and the evidence to back up my claim is right before you. I don't have to provide it. It's there in every issue of that paper every single day.
Yep.
And so it really bothers me to see this sort of reaction. So cheers and jeers. Jeers to CBS and cheers to the New York Times for fixing the problem and admitting that they had screwed up.
Yeah, there you go. You know, and with the New York Times, again, I just got to repeat what you just said as far as the fact that a lot of the revelations that we've heard about the Russia reporting, I mean, these are reporters who very often put their careers, put their lives on the line in order to report certain things, report on leaked or classified documents and so on. And, you know, it's not the easiest job in the world. And it's not, you know, certainly the New York Times has been in business for a long time, but it's never easy to start from zero every day and to build up an entire paper from nothing, from empty pages every day and get that out to the people and so on. So there are going to be mistakes and there are going to be things that we typically don't like. But as far as guilty media outlets in the world right now, yes, I think the New York Times is way down on the list. I mean, there are lots of media publications and so on. Yeah.
Save your anger and your energy for Fox News, okay?
That's right.
That would be my advice.
That's right. So going back to Trump here, Trump actually made it easier, despite what he was saying. One of the first things he did out of the chute right after his inauguration was to make it easier for mentally ill people to buy firearms. Yep, I think that was literally like his first action, right, Buzz?
It's absolutely one of the very first things I remember. And you know, we were sort of shocked, but sort of not already at that point.
And so, you know, when I hear Donald Trump talking about mentally ill people and how this mentally ill person in El Paso and the other mentally ill person in Dayton did all this shooting, well, you know, have we looked into how they were able to get their firearms and were they able to circumvent the system in order to do that because of this particular law that Donald Trump signed into law back in 2017? So, meanwhile, Trump is going to try to trade. This is one of the first things out of the gate after the weekend. He tweeted something along the lines of how he's now going to try to trade gun control for concessions on his border racism, because this is the solution to everything, isn't it? Right. This is the way he approaches every issue. Let's hold something ransom in order to get fulfillment on his racist policies. And this in particular, where you've got an acolyte of Donald Trump who's using the same kind of language in his essay/manifesto about invasions. And so Donald Trump is tackling this issue by linking up more racism to it. How about that?
Yeah, he tried. He may again. And I tell people pay more attention to his tweets than to his what he reads off a teleprompter because the tweets speak more to the guy. I'll tell you from what we know that Trump's immediate circle was shocked to read the tweet that connected border issues to. They didn't know that was coming.
Wow.
They'd been working on this speech all weekend and there was no talk of this. And then suddenly they got up and he's tweeted this that you know, maybe we can tie gun control and border security together or whatever he said.
Well, so this way.
Nobody saw this coming. And then 2 hours later, he turns around and says nothing about this in his speech.
Nope.
So he tweets, this is what we ought to do. And then 2 hours later, he says, no, this is what we ought to do. So there you have it.
Unfucking believable. You know, the award for the stupidest excuse goes to Steve Bannon this week, who, when he was talking about 2020 on the radio with Corey Lewandowski yesterday.
I bet that's a fun show.
Yeah. His take on the El Paso shooting was, what they're attacking is the Trump economic miracle. And you say, well, how do you figure that, Mr. Bannon? How can you possibly frame that as being an attack on Donald Trump's economic prosperity? And well, he explained, it's because of Trump's economic miracle that people were shopping in Walmart. And so that's why they're dead. Because someone was shooting at people who were taking advantage of Donald Trump's economic prosperity, his quote unquote economic miracle. That was Steve Bannon's explanation for why that shooting took place, despite the reality that we have an entire essay written by the shooter enumerating all of it. All of it about the invasion and about how he hates Mexicans and it's horrible for the United States. Just mimicking everything that Donald Trump has said in that manifesto. Steve Bannon said, well, no, you know what? No, that shooter, no, he was totally against Trump. He was totally a liberal. He was a liberal shooting at Trump's economic prosperity. That's what he was doing.
I don't think Steve Bannon's audience is as big as it once was. But the sad part is that we both agree on is that but the people listening to him will believe that. That's the terrifying part.
I don't know how those two guys, Lewandowski and Steve Bannon, ended up escaping prison, but there you go.
Maybe they'll go on the road together or something.
Meanwhile, I think Trump's going to try to go to Dayton and El Paso at some point in the next couple of days, which I guess they need.
I don't know. We'll see.
I guess they need paper towels down there. So he's swinging into action. But you know what?
Even the Republican mayor of El Paso, who's a Trump supporter, knows that their city is anti-Trump at this point. And the mayor said, you know, I'll I'll meet my mayoral obligations to meet with the president of the United States. But to call it an obligation, and then the mayor of Dayton said, we have not heard from the White House. We don't know if he's coming.
Yeah.
For all I know, he's going to Toledo.
Yeah, that'd be so hilarious if he did show up in Toledo. And of course, they went, well, he's just being presidential.
Yeah.
But, you know, right, meanwhile, yeah. I don't know if you know this, but Trump actually still owes the city of El Paso $569,204.
Oh, yeah.
From a campaign rally back in February. And so he wants to go to El Paso. Well, he might as well bring a check with him and pay back El Paso.
Money. He owes money to Orlando. He owes money to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
His campaign owes money all over the country. And we've got to be talking about millions of dollars at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just keeps getting away with it. It's remarkable.
Mm-hmm. And what he does here is he racks up these debts. And then he waits until it's almost time for a lawsuit, and then he settles for pennies on the dollar. That's how Donald Trump operates. That because
the art of the deal, ladies and gentlemen.
That's
the
exactly right.
The aristocrats.
Yes. In fact, I think that is in the art of the deal. I think that thing, because then, I mean, if you can settle for 30 cents on the dollar, why pay the full amount back, right? This is the kind of scam artist he is, for God's sake.
Yeah, oh, the worst.
Well, the tweet of the week. I have to award a tweet of the week. This, I thought, was a really, really solid piece of thinking here.
Yes.
A guy named Ryan Scott on Twitter tweeted this. He said, Fox News did to our parents what they thought video games would do to us. I thought that was awesome.
That's very profound.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, last week on the show, you asked what powers impeachment gives Congress that they don't normally have.
Yes.
And because I didn't know, I made a joke out of it and said, I don't know. I have the answer, and for your Patreon subscribers, I'll give it in the postmortem show.
Oh, outstanding. Okay, so I'm looking forward to that. I can't wait to hear that answer. Plus, we're going to talk about, you know, something I want to talk about, Buzz, during the postmortem show coming up on our Patreon page, is I have a theory about Donald Trump and the stock market that I want to get into, and I'm just now beginning to actually do the limited amounts of research that I can that I'm actually able to do, given the fact that most of Donald Trump's financial records are secret and we're not allowed to see them.
You may be onto something. I want to hear the details.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a, as far as I'm concerned, I have this theory that there's a linkage between the fate of the stock market and Donald Trump's trade war combined with his own financial success or failure, as the case may be. So we're going to talk about that coming up on the Postmortem Show that, of course, is on our Patreon page. Hey, make sure to support this independent podcast by subscribing on our Patreon page. Just $1 a month. You'll barely notice it. $5 a month will start to get you some free shows every day, including our Postmortem Show. $10 a month will get you a Postmortem Show, get the two Postmortem Shows and the After Party. So we're giving you lots of cool stuff in exchange for your membership. But if you want to just sign up for $1 a month, go for it. You can access the comments section on the page. You can post things in our community tab. That's lots of fun, too. Meanwhile, support Buzz Burbank News and Comment every damn Thursday. The best newscast you're going to hear all week. BuzzBurbank.com. RealmNetwork.com. Also, you can follow him on Twitter at Michael J. Elston. That's on Twitter. Meantime, Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. This show is part of it. SexyLiberal.com. You got Jody Hamilton's From the Bunker Podcast, Stephanie Miller's Happy Hour, Randy Rhodes After Hours, Dean Obadala, John Fugelsang, Frangela, Rude Pundit, Dana Goldberg, Proud Resister, a cast of thousands. Make sure to support the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Thank you so much. Postmortem Show coming up next, folks. See you there. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Stephanie Miller, America's original sexy liberal, if you don't count Millard Fillmore. Come join us for the Happy Hour podcast. You're probably already doing plenty of drinking and swearing with this stain of a president in office. Well, join me and my celebrity and comedian friends for a raunchy, uncensored ride through politics and pop culture. Pants optional.